able to in a week topside. The others joined him, and within an hour were moving back toward the entrance, done for the day. Cal.
Tell me again why you aren't attacking them.
Danny seemed frustrated that I was holding back my mobs.
Sure. You were in their camp yesterday, right? Well, there were other groups getting ready to come down, if I'm not mistaken, yes?
I was asking a leading question, so she stayed quiet. When she nodded, I continued.
Here is my thought. We give off a sense of weakness to the really strong groups like this one, and they eventually become overconfident. When a weak group comes down, we catch them entirely off guard and make sure none return to warn the others. The strong group thinks the weak ones were killed accidentally because they know how easy the fights are.
I really hoped she would like this plan.
That is actually brilliant,
she stated, eyeing me as though I had been replaced by someone else. I pretended to be hurt.
Why do you sound so surprised?
She brutally ignored my pain.
Anyway, why do you think this will work?
Well, it looks like that strong group is going to be the first to show up every day, trying to soften me up for the others. You said they called this a training ground, correct?
Yeah. I see. That makes sense. So, most of the groups should be rather weak. I propose that we give regular fights to most of them, and only wipe out a party once a week or so. Enough people are showing up out there that I think that could be attributed to poor group decisions.
Danny amended my plan, prototypically making it a better one.
That is brilliant, I mocked her.
Hey!
Ha! No, it really is a good idea. We don't want too much attention, or they'll send high-ranked people with the lower groups all the time.
I allowed my admiration for her to seep into my voice.
I agree.
She brightened considerably.
How is the place looking?
I think I've got it all reset. I added a few more Bane types to the second room. I was feeling that the number of ranged mobs in there was a bit low.
She agreed with my estimation.
Sounds good. Did you have any ideas for the acid yet?
Yeah, and I discovered a really interesting thing about it. I tried combining it with monsters, and it didn't do anything, so I tried combining it with some of the different materials I had gathered. One combination seems promising. When I added hydrogen and oxygen to the mix, it vastly increased the potency of the acid. I tested a small amount of it, and it dissolved a rabbit within about 10 seconds.
I tried to keep the volume of my voice down, but this scientific breakthrough needed to be known. She dimmed and turned a bit green in a way I had taken to mean disgust.
Wow, that is horrible. Also, I don't know what you were talking about, Cal. I think that you forget that when you absorb things, you learn their name and what that name means. When you say those words to me, they have no meaning and I can't remember them. Just tell me what you are going to call it.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Sorry, I'm thinking of calling it etching solution, because it eats into everything it touches. Seriously, this stuff is dangerous.
I hoped she would heed my warning. That basher had seemed like it was really in pain. She looked at me questioningly.
When did you make this stuff?
Well, you went to sleep and I got bored, I began sheepishly.
And when Cal gets bored, he creates deadly stuff for entertainment,
she interrupted dryly.
Kinda.
I was a little embarrassed, but also glad she was starting to have a high opinion of me, even if it was a little dark.
It's good for us in the long run, though. Speaking of the long run, in your opinion, what is it going to take to get me to F rank 9?
She started considering something and spoke slowly after several seconds of intense thought.
Well, I think you have enough understanding of how things work. So now it is a matter of raw power. When your key spiral fills 2/3 of your core, you should break into F rank 9. At the rate you are going, it should be only a few weeks. Faster if you get large influxes soon.
I did some quick calculations in my head, judging how much essence I was gaining recently.
Well, I am about half full of essence in my spiral, but but haven't been getting many large inputs recently. If people start dropping, I might make it in a few days.
No rush, Cal. Slow and steady makes for a strong power base. I was actually thinking you should try and compress that key spiral down. I don't want to sound mean, but I think you've been getting complacent and layering it on without using all the available space. It's a bad habit,
Danny admonished, directing my attention to all of the space I was wasting in my core. She was right, and under her watchful eye, I worked on compressing it down as much as I could. There was a lot of empty space that I was not using, it turned out. By the time I was finished working to improve myself, I had a significantly smaller but far denser spiral spinning at greater speeds.
Good work! Remember that the faster it spins, the more well-refined it will be, and faster spinning makes for faster essence gathering as well.
She sounded very pleased with my effort. I knew she was right, and my laziness may have really been costing me, especially now that I saw how fast the spiral was spinning. Sorry, my mind had been on other things recently. I'll try to remember that real power is not in what something looks like, but in the quality of the effort that it takes to get there. She beamed at me.
I'm proud of you, Cal. You don't shy away from your faults and work hard to improve yourself when you find them. Oh, by the way, I think a new group is coming in.
She was, of course, correct. I decided to follow her plan and give them a regular fight. When they came into the first room, I ambushed them at the center and watched as my bashers got in several nice shin shots before they finally took my minions down. Retreating at about half losses as usual, I watched as they paused in the room for a bit to recover and gather the loot. While they did so, I scanned their auras, double-checking and pleased upon finding that this was a D-ranked group. None passed the fifth ranking. They continued onward, pushing through the pain as the promise of treasure stirred them from inaction. Already a few coppers richer, apparently the equivalent of a week's pay in the area, they were determined to make it big. The second room was harder for them, as I attacked with the rabbits before they killed off the shroomish, making them work harder to block the poisonous thorns while their legs took a beating. By the time half the swarm of bashers were defeated, inspiring a retreat, the men looked exhausted and filthy. Covered in blood from my rabbits and bruises of their own, they certainly looked ready to call it a day. Most of them, at least. One of the men, trying to convince them, pulled off his helmet and started arguing energetically for the group to continue. He began stalking toward the next tunnel, very inspirationally shouting, "To money!" I saw my chance. The bane on the ceiling by the tunnel took a clean shot, impaling the man with a hand-sized thorn directly through his temple, piercing the skull in one blow. Even if the initial attack hadn't been enough to kill him, it was. The poison, though weak, was administered directly to the man's brain. He fell, and as soon as his aura winked out, I was able to work on directly dissolving his armor with my influence, the process essentially aging them until they fell apart as tattered, useless chunks, while I took the pattern I needed to recreate it. The suddenly rusted remnants of his armor clanging to the floor startled his team greatly, their eyes showing white as their faces drained of blood in shock. From their perspective, it had been over in an instant. The fallen man's teammates saw a thorn impact their friend, then saw him drop and hit the floor. For some reason, almost naked. I left his wool clothes on his corpse as I already had a few sets of those to work with, but I got all of his armor and his well-made sword. Neat. Apparently he had been fairly rich. The sword was really well-made. They tried to pick the remains of the fallen gear back up, but I had bound it all to the floor by growing a layer of stone around it while I worked to break each piece down and study it, making it impossible for the frustrated humans to take. Furious, they grabbed their fallen comrade's corpse and departed, faces grim, when the dead man's essence finally made its way to me. Oh, yeah, I moaned in pleasure. The D-ranked man had far more pure and abundant essence than any I had ever had the pleasure of absorbing. Carefully, adding it to my spiral as densely as possible. I watched as my energy regrew to nearly half, this time much stronger than before I had compressed it.
That's the stuff. Danny, you want to try any of this?
I groaned in ecstasy. She looked on, hungry but unable to touch the essence until it made its way to her through our bond.
Brute, you know I can't take that directly. And what happened to taking out Group slowly?
I thought quickly.
We had made a plan after all. Finally, I mentally shrugged.
Well, there is no way anyone will blame anything but that man's overconfidence. Removing your armor when in a hostile area?
Tsk, tsk.
Not a smart move.
To be fair, he only removed his helmet. You removed his armor, you dirty dungeon.
She chuckled at her own joke.
But you make a good point. Congrats on the essence. I'm glad to see that that worked out so well. Also, how good is that armor?
It is okay, I suppose. No enchantments or anything fun on the armor, but I got a full set of plate mail and the chain mail it goes over. I'll adjust the size for medium and larger guys and put them out as loot, most likely.
The sword is more interesting, though.
I left off tantalizingly, knowing her rabid curiosity would make her ask.
How so?
She was rather impatient today, wasn't she? I smiled to myself.
Well, it had a temporary enchantment on it. I think it is an augmentation that sharpens and cleans the blade. I think I can alter it a bit to add it to the spikes the Bane shoots, but that isn't what I am interested in.
Oh?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the enchantment like this is temporary because it was cast on the sword, but looks like tightly woven essence, not something else like mana, and it is always active. Permanent enchantments are formed by cutting inscriptions like on that pendant, then putting your own essence into the inscriptions, right? That allows you to turn it on or off at will. She was keeping up with me so far, I could tell.
Sounds correct so far. Just so you know, cutting those in is called inscribing, and when done properly, it is called a rune.
She took a quick second to boost my knowledge. I acknowledged her input and continued.
Well, I am wondering if I can use the beast cores to power enchantments. Since they can store essence, it should be possible to draw the energy from them and not yourself, right?
Danny went quiet for a moment.
Well, in theory, it is possible to use specially refined beast cores as mana accumulators, but the cost is usually so high for even a normal core that no one, that I have heard of anyway, has tried it for just essence.
Okay, good. Next, I'm wondering if I could use the corruption in a stone for anything.
From her reaction, I think the answer I was about to get was no.
What? Corrupted stones are useless. No one can manipulate it, so...
She went silent, realizing that I'd been able to move the taint around rather easily.
She walked right into my trap. Right, I can. And when I put it back in items that naturally have the stuff, like rocks and metal, they become stronger and sturdier, closer to their pure elemental form. I'm wondering what would happen if I used the corruption instead of purified essence to fill a beast core, then used that stone to create an enchantment.
I don't know,
Danny slowly thought through the implications.
It is an interesting idea, though. Go for it. I mean, you can always make more cores, right? Remember, though, you haven't encountered all of the different essence types that exist, so make extras.
I set up a few more cores next to the ones I was planning on using for essence overflow, then increased the amount of them to 6 each. One for fire, water, air, earth, infernal, and celestial essence. Since my main prey was humans, I figured I could eventually fill them all up. Next, I looked at the sharpening augmentation on the sword. An enchantment is just a specific pattern of essence placed onto an item, and if it was inscribed without making mistakes, it could become a rune, which is a permanent enchantment powered by essence only when you wanted to pass energy through it. The reason permanent enchantments, or runes, were rarer was due to the pattern needing to be perfect. If there was a flaw, the essence would flow out of the rune and the pattern would be useless at best. At worst, it would activate and have an unintended effect. Conversely, when done properly, it was difficult to remove an enchantment because the essence that flowed through it would eventually strengthen the pattern, again known as a rune or inscription, placed on the item to the point where if it were made on wood, you could burn the log away and the rune would still be stable. Not that they were indestructible. Far from it, really. It would just take a lot of strength or applied knowledge of where to strike to destroy a well-used rune. But it could be done. The downside to using a runed versus an enchanted item was obviously that you needed to provide essence to it in order for it to function. This is where the beast cores would potentially come into play. With mana being a far more potent source of energy that would last far longer, I could see why people would wait to get mana accumulators set before going to the expense of creating really good runed items, as correctly and permanently inscribed items were properly named. I had some time before the next party would come to fight, so after resetting the place, not hard as the last group barely made progress, I tried to apply the enchantment to the daggers I could make. I was quickly frustrated, as I could not directly integrate the rune into the pattern. I could splice creatures together, for goodness sake! Did I not have enough knowledge to cut a pattern into a chunk of metal? Oh, wait. A flash of inspiration struck, and I grew a dagger in the boss room. Then, with infinite patience and precision, I formed the most accurate lines possible by creating acid molecule by molecule onto the blade. A new group had entered the dungeon and cleared the first room by the time I was finished with my newest creation. Now, to test it. I extended a few lines of essence into the rune and... it flared to life! Under my watchful gaze, the edge of the blade constricted at the molecular level, forming tighter bonds along each edge. Along the entire blade, tiny imperfections fixed themselves, leaving no space for blood or gore to find a foothold. It had worked! Now, it would never need to be sharpened, and a quick flick of the blade would cast off all viscera that it accumulated. Now for the dangerous part, as I might lose all of my effort. I absorbed the dagger and looked at the pattern that appeared in my mind. Yes! I could now directly create this dagger, with a rune attached. I called it a honed steel dagger, and I was very proud of my work. Turning my attention to the fighting happening in, oh my, the third room already, I quickly and gleefully took control of a large basher and made a concentrated attack on the group attacking me. Bashing into the legs of the least armored human, as the creature's namesake suggested, the archer stumbled, and I was able to do some considerable damage to him before his pals finished off my remaining defenders. I watched the man cry in pain. "I think I broke his tibia and fibula," I casually informed Danny.
"That sounds dirty. What do you mean?"
Danny lecherously inquired. I breathed a snort at her odd sexual humor. "I broke his leg below the knee. There are two bones there. In a human, they are called tibia and fibula. I don't know if that would be the same for a different race."
"Ah, got it."
She seemed less interested now that she realized I wasn't playing along and making a sexual reference. I watched the man sob on my floor as he writhed around. "Think that will be enough for them to leave?" I questioned, distractedly, mind back on my new dagger. She looked at them through her connection to me.
"I doubt it. Plus, they're already healing him."
"They can do that?" Enraged, I turned my attention back to the group and watched as another lightly armored man directed wood-type essence, specialized earth and water, that is, into the man's leg, which I assume knitted the bone back together as he was soon able to stand up. Then, walking with a limp, he and the party moved into the tunnel toward the next room.
"That's not fair!"
I gasped in fury.
"Your boss mob can heal by hurting people, so why is this a surprise?"
Danny did not seem to understand my indignation. It's just... fine! Be right again! I huffed, unable to form a proper response.
I will, thank you,
she replied primly. They attacked my boss, the Bloody Bane, with everything they could muster. I directed a few bashers into the fray at critical times, knocking them off balance long enough for a spike to land in an arm or a vine to whip someone across the helm. The fight lasted much longer this time around, since the group was already tired and in pain. Finally, the boss collapsed. I had failed to take them out, but had still gained some important knowledge, so I dropped a silver coin for each of them, as well as the coveted holy symbol pendant thingy. Though likely poisoned, the men still were wildly excited. The archer whose leg I had broken nearly wept and kept repeating, "I just knew it would be worth it." I was confused by this. Why were they so happy? I demanded of Danny. She informed me that the currency system was such that 100 copper coins was worth a silver coin, 100 silver coins were worth a gold coin, and 100 gold coins were worth a platinum coin, whatever that was. Apparently, I had drastically overpaid these guys. Silver and copper were easy to make, so I wasn't worried about it until Danny informed me of what the consequences may be.
If everyone thinks you are going to be worth a month's pay for an hour of fighting, they will come in and kill absolutely everything over and over, just looking for a way to avoid working elsewhere. Humans can be rather enthusiastic in their greed.
I winced at this. Yikes. I'm not ready for that.
I agree, and I'm glad you realize it.
Danny watched the men who were wandering around the room. Each of the men who had taken a thorn and become poisoned pulled out a vial and drank something. Then the man with the plant affinity worked for a while to get his team healed up enough to stop their bleeding as they relaxed and cultivated for a while. "What was that?" "They drank something," I muttered suspiciously.
"Probably an antidote for the poison,"
Danny whispered, since the men were so close and her voice was audible if humans paid attention. I tried to keep my curiosity under control, but couldn't manage it.
"Oh, thanks.
Also, can only plant affinity users heal?" Danny couldn't refuse an opportunity to educate me. She glanced at the humans focused on their key spirals, then moved into a furiously whispered lecture.
"No, actually, all of them can heal. There is a solid reason they don't all do it, though. Apparently the problem is that they feel the element used. So being healed by a fire cultivator is not that pleasant, as it tends to feel like your body is being cauterized. Earth grinds really bad, as if your bones were being crushed. Cool and soothing water cultivators are sought after, and apparently plant or wood feels like roots or worms squirming through you. Since he is a wood cultivator, he is not the ideal healer for a group this size, but most likely he was the only trained healer they could find."
"What about celestial and infernal?" She had said every type, after all.
"Celestial healers are called clerics and are usually part of the church. They are actually the most effective healers, but traveling with them comes with strings attached. Infernal users, I doubt they would heal anyone but themselves, but I think their version of healing hurts worse than getting the wound originally would."
I wonder if I can make something useful out of that information. Thanks for letting me know, Danny. We watched the men cultivate for a while before eventually getting up, stretching, and leaving. They were the last group of the night, allowing me to focus hard on cultivation and the concepts I had acquired over the last few days. That was the night when I broke into F rank 9. 14. Dale woke up quickly, feeling something amiss. Something was wrong. There was a threat to him in the area. For several weeks, his team had been going into the dungeon at first light, and Dale was becoming stronger, his battle-trained senses more aware to impending danger. Slipping from his bed, he moved stealthily to the tent flap. It began to slide open, and the grinning head of Hans slowly peeked into the room. Stepping into the room fully, a bucket of ice-cold water became visible. Dale shuddered internally. He had only been woken up a few times with that water, but each time it was worse. Last week, the water had ice in it somehow. It was midsummer. Ice! Dale's eyes narrowed as he prepared his counterattack. He carefully reached down and flipped the water back onto the startled Hans. "Gotcha, you bastard!" Dale yelled, followed up by attempting a brutal slapping combination attack on Hans. "I'll get you, you brat. You got lucky today, but you can't stay awake forever." A drenched Hans scampered off yelling threats, leaving a cheerful Dale to get reacquainted with his armor. The full group met again at breakfast, the team having decided to eat together each day. Unexpectedly, the chef decided to swing by again as they were finishing their meal.
"Morning, lads!"
His voice faltered and dropped a few decibel levels at their wins.
"Did it again. Sorry. Listen, I'm going to be making the herbs that are available in there a daily request. They tasted so darn good on my food that I had them examined by that there apothecary that showed up and has been making those fancy potions. Turns out they are jam-packed full of essence and help with all sorts of minor health issues that I've been seeing recently, so I'm going to be cooking with them a lot."
Looking Dale in the eyes.
"Since y'all are the first to go in every day, I figured you'd be able to grab the best bunches. Get 'em for me, and everyone around here will eat better, and I'll be sure to tell them you're to thank. Or the food'll get worse. Maybe I'll accidentally burn yours every day, and I'll still tell the other man you're to thank."
With that, the oddly well-muscled chef walked away whistling off-key.
"Sure is a fan of the carrot and the stick," Dale murmured. "Shall we make sure to bring back those herbs?"
"Yup."
"For sure," agreed.
They moved to make their way into the dungeon, Dale in the lead. With the good tutors, clean essence, and constant work, Dale had progressed to the F rank 6 rather quickly, as well as put on some solid muscle. Now, not only was he able to keep up in his heavy plate armor, he had a good handle on the skills and abilities he needed to decidedly defeat the deadly denizens of the dark dungeon. Within an hour of hard work, they had cleared the dungeon and were finishing off the boss. As they did daily, each sat and cultivated, but an oddity in the behavior of his friends made Dale look up, noticing the men staring at the silverwood tree.
"What's going on, guys?" he inquired dreamily, almost in a trance as he worked to gather the loose essence into his center.
"The tree has been growing a lot recently. We are wondering if that is normal."
Craig let him know, frowning at an internal thought.
"We're also trying to figure out how this tree will help us move into the B ranks," Hans stated. "It isn't exactly a common thing to have access to, after all."
"Sadly, we won't know until the elves start making an appearance." Craig derailed the conversation with a hand wave.
"Well, let's head on out. Nothing more to do here. Dale, you should work on integrating what you have absorbed into your key spiral. Don't fill up too much or it will be harder to process."
Carefully making their way back to the surface, they were startled to see that the place was bustling with movement, people running around and shouting orders to each other. They noticed that Guildmaster Frank was in the largest, loudest group, shouting at another, somewhat taller man.
"No, you can't have that space! We've had it roped off and claimed for the portal mages to build on for weeks now!"
Frank was red in the face, spittle flying from his lips.
"You are going to deny the Holy Church an area that will be able to best serve the people? This will be the center of the goings-on in the area, and who better to guide people than the Church?"
the taller man angrily intoned, voice ringing out clearly in a manner trained to catch attention.
"The Portal Mages!"
Frank roared, throwing his hands into the air.
"That is their exact job! They guide and send people where they want to go."
"Well, the Church sends them where they need to go,"
the tall man boomed back, unimpressed.
Frank saw Dale's group walking over and visibly worked to calm himself.
It's a moot point. The man who owns all this land is here. He'll make the decision,
Frank declared smugly, knowing that Dale was a friend.
Excellent. Where is he?
The taller man demanded. Frank pointed at the group, and he walked over. Going directly to Hans, whose face he could see was grinning, the man introduced himself.
I am Father Richard, a humble cleric,
Frank snorted at that pronouncement, who has been promoted to run a church in this area, as it is obviously sorely needing guidance.
That man, he jabbed his finger at Frank, has been trying to place travel and leisure over divine teaching, and I demand that you tell him that this is the perfect location for a church,
he finished in a ringing tone that reached every ear. Hans looked from Father Richard to Frank.
Well then, Frank, it is the perfect location for a church, Hans told his guildmaster, and nearly burst into laughter at the look of triumph on Richard's face and the wry look on Frank's.
And there you have it,
Richard crowed, throwing his hands in the air and beaming.
Excuse me, Father, but,
Dale began. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to match Father Richard's pealing voice.
The Lord provides, and we will have a beautiful place of worship, and...
Hey!
Frank barked, thrusting his finger at Hans.
He isn't the landowner!
He...
Richard whirled on the now maniacally laughing Hans and fixed him with a glare.
Father, it is the perfect place.
Hans laughed so hard he fell over.
I told him, just like you asked.
Everyone was chuckling except the crestfallen priest, so Dale decided to speak up, lifting his visor.
I own the land here, Father Richard.
Oh, you? Well, right, lad. Listen,
Richard quietly muttered.
I need this. I think my promotion to this place was a punishment. My branch of the church displeased the bishop, and when I was finally up for promotion to a location-based diocese instead of being a wandering minister, I was told to come here and build a worthy house of worship. I can't be put to the side. I just...
He sighed sadly, looking at the chunk of land he wanted.
I need to make something memorable here.
Does it need to be that exact spot?
Dale looked around and saw nothing really special about the area.
It looks like all the other flat land around here is claimed. All these tents, I'm sure people have plans to build. How much of this land do you own? A few acres around the dungeon entrance?
Richard searched. Not exactly. Dale began with a smile, only to be cut off again. Richard interrupted with a frustrated growl.
Not even that? Rats! The land price here must have skyrocketed when this was found. I'll never be able to afford to build a church near here. Father!
Regaining his attention, Dale grinned.
I own this mountain.
What?
When I discovered the dungeon, I originally did buy only the land directly containing the dungeon. It took everything I had.
When the scouting team showed up, they left me with enough gold to buy this entire mountain, since there had never been anything useful found on it. And, well, since it is a contested mountain range, the price was right, Dale revealed with a grin, adding on accomplishments to drive the price of renting land up subconsciously in Richard's mind. I bought the land from both the Lion and the Phoenix Kingdom, just in case. It helped that my intelligence as a sheepherder was somewhat underestimated. Both kingdoms assumed I wanted uninterrupted grazing pastures, not a valuable resource like a dungeon.
Brilliant, Frank whispered.
He hadn't realized the forethought Dale had put into his good fortune. When land was purchased, any deeds were signed with mana-infused ink that was impossible to fake or forge.
The contracts had to be honored by both kingdoms when before the contested nature of the mountain would allow one of the kingdoms to attempt a hostile takeover if he had only bought from the other. In fact, the contract for the land would also be enforced magically. Frank wondered if Dale knew about this aspect of his purchase.
Listen, Dale tried to placate the priest. I think you should move further away from here. What if beasts are drawn to this place and attack your church? What if something breaks out of the dungeon? Will you stand in the way and fight when creatures are attacking your followers?
Yes, Richard told him seriously.
See, Dale sputtered to a stop, train of thought derailed.
Wait, what?
Yes, I will, Richard calmly promised. I will protect them.
Dale tried again, rubbing at his temples as a headache threatened.
Look, Father, praying at a problem won't make it go away.
Yes, it will, Father Richard chuckled darkly.
Dale tried again with a sheepish chuckle, seeing why Frank had gotten so angry.
Father, you aren't understanding me.
No, you aren't understanding me.
Father Richard grinned and bowed his head. Murmuring a short prayer, he gestured at the empty lot that he had been after. For a moment, nothing seemed to happen as the sun rose higher in the sky. A word came out of Father Richard's mouth that shook the air and made no sense to Dale, followed by a beam of light that tore from the heavens and settled into a perfect square on the entire lot for several glorious seconds. The sound created was amazing, a cross between a choir singing and rock exploding. When the light faded several moments later, the ground had been fused into perfectly clear glass, 3 feet straight down. The heat coming off of the molten land was enough to singe Dale's eyebrows, even from this distance. The father turned back towards Dale.
You see, young man, I am a rank A priest. If someone were threatening my flock, I would be more than willing, nay, I would cheerfully send them to the Creator.
Dale watched the clear liquid of the ground steam, all impurities apparently burned away.
Well, the spot, is yours, it seems. Let's make a lease, shall we? What are you willing to offer as payment?
Dale tried not to be stunned by the casual display of apocalyptic destructive capabilities. Father Richard snorted at Dale's attempt to seem nonchalant.
Many things. Firstly, I will build my own building. I will provide healing to people as needed for a small offering. With this many people, families are bound to arrive. It won't always be the simple military camp it is now. A church in the area will alleviate many concerns families may have. I will teach and train youngsters for no charge and accept any into my order who are gifted with an affinity for celestial essence. I will be able to provide them a means to gain this essence in the proper ways. Often, children with celestial affinity are small or weak because they cannot gain any essence. I will teach them how to properly cultivate through their prayers. Finally, I will provide a bank to the community that will not be corrupt as a non-morally guided bank would be. We will only take a small amount in fees that will provide the bulk of our income and our rent to you, which will be determined by a percentage of the gross amount we earn.
Dale was impressed by this man's knowledge of the world, but realized that as an A-ranked person, he could be several hundred years old.
Father, you seem very knowledgeable and wise. I do agree to these terms, though I must ask, why did it take so long for you to be given a church? You obviously have the power and wisdom to stand alone.
We, my sect of the church, that is, are in disfavor with the bishop due to our favored practice of worship,
Father Richard disclosed brightly, happy that the land was his.
Why? What do you do?
Dale was genuinely curious.
We do the Lord's work as our penance, our service to the world. We hunt demons and the undead.
Pardon me. I have work to do,
Father Richard jauntily stated, moving toward the small market area to find craftsmen. Cal. Danny had been correct. Wiping out a party every week or so caused no undue attention as the amount of dungeon divers increased. Apparently, the promise of long life and vast riches caused people to ignore the danger inherent in this occupational choice. Go figure. Only a month and some change since they arrived, now a sea of adventurers waited on a line for the guild to grant them permission to enter, only the first group of the day showed up on a regular basis. They seemed to have some kind of precedence, maybe? That didn't really bother me, though. Thanks to the constant essence gains I was making, I had gained enough power fast enough that six of the beast cores around me held their own key spiral. They weren't sentient stones, of course. I spiraled their essence manually. Thanks to keeping these cores charged, I was able to fill the rooms with mobs nearly as soon as the humans vacated them, allowing multiple groups to enter in staggered time frames. I would eventually use or absorb the essence accumulated in the beast cores, but I would have choked on the amount of energy I was gaining. I could not just take it all in. Similarly, the corruption stones were also becoming full, but try as I might, I could not make them spiral. They just sat there, glowing with their corruption's respective color. Thanks to the massive group of people moving through me, and the large amounts of deaths that occurred seemingly by their own stupidity, just a few short weeks after entering the 9th rank of the F-Series, Danny was coaching me on how to move into the D-Rankings.
Let me explain to you what needs to happen, Cal. The reason it is called breaking into a new rank is that you need enough knowledge and power to further break your essence and the mental barriers to advancement. I need to warn you. It hurts. A lot.
She started seriously.
To get into the D ranks, your key and essence spiral needs to shatter into a fractal. This means that each part of the pattern has the same statistical character as the whole.
She took a breath as I attempted to understand her meaning.
In other words,
she clarified,
your key spiral needs to become a spiral made of spirals which are further made of spirals. The essence swirl that it draws from needs to become a swirl made of swirling essence. This will, when you manage it, allow you to astronomically increase the essence you can hold and absorb at any given time, at least 100 times more at any given point.
I kept pace with her lecture, making affirmative noises as she spoke. That sounds really difficult.
It is, and it will take a lot of your essence to break down the other essence. The payoff is absolutely worth it, though. I've been making you practice splitting your focus, which is why we waited until you had those beast cores swirling with energy. Spinning multiple spirals is really good practice for this. Also, it is a benefit that humans will never get to use.
She made sure I was paying attention and told me something rather unexpected.
Now, achieving a breakthrough may take a few days to do, and will require all of your focus. So I suggest that tonight, when everyone is out and going to bed, you grow a wall of stone to block them and keep them out while you do this.
What? Why? This was very unlike her. She usually was encouraging more fighting and got after me sometimes when I didn't take an opportunity to finish off an opponent. It turned out that she had a very good reason, though.
People may get, upset when they are unable to find monsters to kill and loot, that is. Since your attention will be focused inward, mobs won't respawn if killed. Adventurers may look for other ways to get money or find a new source of energy to cultivate from.
Waiting for evening was torture when I was this excited, but I was able to gain more energy from cultivators by pulling refined key from them, as well as when a lucky shot from a thorn staggered a man and a basher crushed his skull. When the sun disappeared behind the mountain range, a soft grinding of stone could be heard if one were close and paying attention. Before attempting my breakthrough, I etched in the enchantment for protection and durability I had gained from a shield after a lucky kill some time ago. At the activation portion of the rune,
where I would normally deposit essence into, instead I placed the corrupted core, which was full of earth, and created a shunt that sent its energy into the rune. The energy oozed into the pattern, slowly filling it to completion, until with a dull flash and an awkward flatulence-esque noise, it successfully activated the rune.
Danny, it worked! Look! I made corruption useful!
I loved being the first to discover something. It made me feel smart and pretty.
Great! Hopefully it'll hold until you are ready for people to come back in.
She congratulated me, while reminding me that the clock was ticking. Door now in place, I got down to the serious business of breaking into the D-rank. I tried starting the process where the essence was churning on the outer rim of my gem, but it interrupted the flow of essence entering from outside. If I tried at the end, where it was being pulled and processed by the key spiral, it blocked the flow. I broke through my pride and finally asked for assistance.
Huh. Danny, where do I start?
Obviously, she had been waiting for me to ask.
You need to find the smallest part, which doesn't affect the rest, and begin there. It should pull essence from the rest of the key spiral as a thread that is the same comparative size as the thread coming from the essence into the key spiral.
Mentally moving deeper into my key spiral, I reached the exact center where the essence was no longer processing, only spinning. Holding that minuscule amount of energy with my mind, more of an idea than an energy source, I began rotating at the reverse of the remainder of the accumulated key. My mind almost broke in pain as my very being was twisted counter to the rest of my soul. Somehow, I was able to stabilize the first position in its new rotation before forcing myself to continue. I should note, all the key I contained was a single thread from the center to the outer edge. If I stopped working, I would need to begin again with this first bit. Spinning it in the opposite direction did not break this thread, but instead stretched it further, making it even thinner and well-refined. From that point in time, I needed to do two sequential areas along the thread simultaneously. Obviously harder and more painful than just one point, it was required in order for the energy flow to properly continue. This continued. One spot along the thread, then two. One, then two. Each distinct position along the line was slightly larger than the one previous, and I needed to take frequent breaks to ensure all the preceding spirals were turning at the same rate. I have no idea how a flesh-and-blood body would be able to survive this process. I was in intense pain, and my body did not actually have nerves. Maybe pain of the soul was the same no matter what type of being you were? In a constant state of breaking down the essence, I held each pattern time and again until I was certain I would be able to do so naturally with minimal concentration before I moved to the next. Eventually, I came to the end of the key. I was very excited at the prospect of completion until Danny sent me a sleepy reminder that I would need to do this with my essence spiral as well. The outer edge that stored and drew in loose essence. Forcing the changes onto the swirl was easier now that I had figured out how to properly mold it, requiring less concentration to achieve the result I wanted. Still focusing intently on not making mistakes, I reached out, and along the spinning essence I made tiny vortexes that hungrily pulled power from the one previous, until finally I came to the start of the spiral. The start of the spiral pulled loose essence from the world around me. Luckily for my sanity, the pain of this process was far less than working on the key spiral had been, being so far from the center of my soul. Until I was able to subconsciously hold this pattern at all times, allowing it to become a natural process for me, I would need to manually spin every single vortex at the same rate along the whole thread. Holding the pattern in shape was using an exorbitant amount of essence, allowing me to see why this particular breakthrough was so difficult. When I asked Danny how I was doing time-wise, she let me know that I had been focusing for 4 days, still faster than she expected.
"My brain hurts,"
I complained, projecting an image of a brain turning into ooze.
"You don't have a brain,"
she reminded me somewhat insensitively.
Sure, rub it in. How are things going out here?
I quickly scanned my area to see if there were any obvious problems.
Good. People tried breaking in a few times, but I think they are now just waiting.
She seemed smug about our door being unbreachable. I checked my essence levels, which, though depleted, I found that I still had plenty to work with.
Well, they can wait a bit longer.
If you think we are ready for it,
in my opinion, it is time to change things up in here.
Excellent. By the way, congratulations on your new D ranking.
She cheered me enthusiastically.
If I could blush. Thank you. I know it is just D rank 0 at this point, but the first 5 ranks are all about direct essence accumulation, right?
Pretty much. D rank 6 and above require greater knowledge, but I think at this rate, you will get there soon.
Danny glowed warmly, showing her approval.
Wonderful. Let's start now.
Reaching out to the essence contained in the cores around me, I slowly and carefully pulled it in, rejoicing at the greater amount of essence that I was able to take into myself. Still being careful, as I did not want to disrupt the new energy pattern I had spent days creating, I collected every single drop of essence they contained. One by one, the dancing lights in them went dark, their accumulated essence flowing into me. I quickly felt bloated. Each of the cores had held nearly half the amount of energy I had been able to contain while I was in the F ranks. When they were empty, I still had not increased in rank, but was now energized enough to move a large portion of the area I held influence over. Daily, I had slowly extended downward, but had never taken the time needed to move the stone in the area, simply extending myself. The area I could now open would, slightly, more than double my size horizontally, and allow me to have another entire floor added vertically. Now ready to begin, I followed Danny's instructions and began correctly moving the stone while absorbing the vibrations so as to not cause deadly destruction I would not be able to capitalize on. Luckily, the process was not quite as slow as I had originally worried about. Creating a buffer zone was simply a matter of willpower, so within a day or two, I was able to add 3 more rooms on the first floor and a total of 8 on the new second floor. I increased the amount of tunnels as well. Obviously, the old layout was not working at the best efficiency for slowing adventurers. Instead of just one tunnel connecting all the rooms, I now had many tunnels that connected to either each other, nothing but traps, or a room that didn't allow for access deeper into the dungeon. You would never know if a room connected without first exploring it, because each of the tunnels connected at opposite ends of the room, having a sharp turn that you could not see around. Some of those turns did indeed allow people to venture deeper in, but the majority were eventually dead ends. I left the rooms and traps on the first floor mainly alone, not bothering to alter them too much. One major change on the first floor was a vain attempt to alleviate the annoyance created by people poking at my walls by moving the iron vein into the entry room. Minor pun there, sorry. This wasn't so much an attempt to help prospectors as a way to provide raw materials so people could mine the ores and turn it into new items for me to study. Moving on to the lower floor, I placed traps with highly pressurized acid pockets that would blast into the air at high speed if the thin stone covering them were disrupted. I had found that even if an item were destroyed by means other than me breaking it down with influence, as long as the destruction happened in my dungeon, I could obtain the pattern. Therefore, I was unconcerned if armor and weapons were damaged or destroyed by my etching solution. At a few of the dead-end tunnels, I placed large slabs of stone that could be dropped, trapping the occupants in a room containing light drippings of acid which would turn into a downpour when people were trapped, or could possibly explode if exposed to open flame. Everything I made was, of course, an attempt to gain as much essence as possible, but I liked to reward intelligence and ingenuity, so I always added ways for these traps to be deactivated. I wanted people to continue coming down here, after all,
and with a reputation as a place where the smartest and strongest could almost always prevail, people would always assume they were among the ranks of the certain survivors. Finally done with the cosmetic and trap changes, it was time for me to try and upgrade my mobs, then make a boss monster for the lower floor. I kept the Bloody Bane as the floor boss of the first level, as I didn't really care to make him a common mob, to be frank. He seemed a bit lackluster. After all, the entire time he had existed, he had never managed a kill.
I looked into what I had available for mobs.
I could try to upgrade my bashers, but what would they grow into?
I was uncertain if pouring essence into them was the correct way to go about things here. Maybe I should just use what I had, fill up the dungeon with a large number of mobs, and wait for inspiration after opening the door. Hang on a second. The door?
The door! Of course! When the blood moss had absorbed essence and infernal energy, it had naturally evolved and gained vampirism-style abilities. With my ability to move corruption, could I build mobs in the style I wished?
Nothing to do but try.
But where to start? First, I created a few of my bashers and made them hold still so I could experiment on them. Which kind of feels creepy to think, but it had to be done. They were all at the second rank of the F-series, so I had some room to grow them. I decided to start by attempting to increase one's ranking by infusing it with air corruption and essence. I poured a bit of each into the basher, and it started to noticeably grow. I added more, feeling confident with this plan, when the poor thing gave a startled squeak and exploded into a bloody mist, which slowly settled on the walls and floor, scraps of fur and bone plopping wetly onto the other bashers in the room.
What the hell?
The other bashers were now fidgeting, desperately trying to fight the compulsion I had placed on them in order to run away.
Well, that was dramatic. What just happened?
Danny seemed far too calm for the literal bloodbath that had just occurred.
I was just trying to rank it up, and it just popped!
I exclaimed wildly. Did my voice sound shrill there?
That's odd. If you were just giving it essence, it should have easily and naturally assimilated it.
Danny was now concerned.
Well, I mean, I was trying to add a tiny little bit of taint to it to give it new abilities,
I confessed innocently.
Oh, that makes sense. It seems like a sound plan, at least. What did you use?
Danny inquired in a calm tone.
I went with air essence. It looked like it was working, but obviously not.
I walked her through the process I had attempted, followed by the obvious end result of the test. She considered what I had done, then offered an explanation.
Your bashers don't normally have much air essence in their makeup, do they? Maybe that one's body rejected it. Or maybe you just added too much taint too quickly. Try again, but add less taint at a time,
Danny declared, settling in to watch.
You want me to try with air again?
Why not?
Because the last one exploded.
It's a figure of... Yes, try air again, Cal,
she slowly exhaled. Selecting another one of the bashers cowering on the floor amongst the gore of its brother, I again started adding essence, slowly this time. As before, this one started growing rapidly.
Stop!
Danny ordered. I did, waiting for an explanation.
Look, the amount of corruption almost overtook the essence it can hold. That is probably what happened with the first one. Are you adding corruption and essence at the same rate?
Yeah, about half of what I was adding was air-type corruption.
Try a smaller amount. Maybe one part tainted to four parts pure essence?
She directed. We continued on the same rabbit, and it started growing again, albeit slower. When it had gained enough to get to F rank 6, I stopped adding essence and waited for a result to become apparent. As I had hoped, it gained an elemental ability.
Yes! It worked!
I exulted in our success. Danny was a bit more impatient.
What does it do?
I looked at what the bunny could do now. It's called cleave. What does that mean?
Oh, cool! That means when it attacks, it'll hit an area in an arc in front of it. Since it is air-based, it'll likely create an intense gust of wind with each hit that will form the arc. Even if it misses, the air may extend and successfully land an attack,
Danny told me triumphantly.
Wow! That is cool!